You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
What's up, Launch Street? Tamara here, your host and lover of innovative thinking. I don't know, can you love innovative thinking? Yeah, I think that you can. I do. I love the process of thinking differently about what's right in front of you, which is our definition of innovation here at Launch Street. Doesn't just have to be disruptive, doesn't just have to be blue skies, but I think oftentimes the best innovation comes from thinking differently about what's right in front of you, your work, your challenges, your resources, your opportunities. And that is exactly what our guest did. Lori Nadeau is the founder of, get ready for it, Smokin' Marys. What is that, you ask? Oh, just a Bloody Mary mix that makes your Bloody Marys all smokin'. Yeah, that's right. And this came from a frustration and an opportunity that she discovered all at the same time. Now, this podcast is brought to you by Brility Digital. What do they do, you ask? Well, they tackle incredibly tough business challenges from a strategic growth perspective in order to implement the most effective digital resources to meet your objectives. And they have a free digital assessment tool that they're giving to Launch Street for free, not to other people for free, just us. So whether you're a big brand, small brand, or even not, you don't even have to be in the marketing department, just someone who cares about the health of your business, go check it out, because I promise you that no matter what business you're in, the digital world and your impressions there matter. All right, let's get to some Smokin' Marys. Lori, thank you so much for being here. I have a feeling we're going to go on a little bit of a wild ride today.
Oh, I sure hope so. I definitely want to have some fun with you here this morning.
I think so. Well, let's start with, what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Well, most people are surprised to learn about me that I'm a diabetic, and I'm an insulin dependent on an insulin pump. And most people are very surprised by that.
It is kind of, I mean, alcohol and diabetic doesn't normally go together, does it?
Well, it can. It can. It depends on how well you take care of yourself and how you manage that. But one of the things that they're really surprised about is how I actually incorporated how I made the mix with my having diabetes. And I know that's going to be kind of an interesting story in its own. So many people are focused on the, on the keto and the sugars and all that. And I said, and some people are actually diabetic when they're asking me about the sugars in it. And when I tell them that I put about a tablespoon of sugar per 5 gallons, and that is only to balance out the acid. And it's funny. And I say, well, it's because I'm diabetic. And they kind of look at me and they're like, wow. It's like they expect you, when they find out you're diabetic, it's like they have this image of diabetics as being ill or looking ill. And it doesn't have to be that way.
Oh, that's funny. All right. Well, that actually leads into my kind of first question, which is, we're talking about a Bloody Mary mix here and a smoking one at that. So what's the origin story behind Smokin' Mary?
Well, it actually started out, I was helping some friends do a farmer's market, and because they wanted some help, they were trying to help out a cousin that had a greenhouse operation. And so I said, yeah, sure, I'll do some with you. And when everybody else started coming out of the ground, we had a whole bunch of leftover tomatoes. And that friend of mine actually taught me how to can. So I canned every kind of sauce under the sun. And I was actually smoking the salsas that I was canning as well. And then I still had a bunch left over. And a neighbor said to me, well, why don't you make Bloody Mary mix? And my whole response was, well, because I never thought of it. You know, the only time I ever really drank Bloody Marys was either at an airport, on a plane, or in a casino. And those are things that I really didn't frequent much. So I went online and I found this recipe on Google. It had like four ingredients. And I'm like, oh, no. So I actually, my husband is a gourmet cook. So he cooks with so much flavor. And that four ingredient recipe had no flavor. So what I did was I opened up the fridge and opened up the spice cabinet. And I started just throwing in all kinds of flavor additives. And, you know, it ended up being 5 years later, 16 revisions. And that's when, that's what Smoke and Mary, how she was born.
This may sound like a weird question, but when you first smoked and put it together and had a sip, were you expecting it to taste good? Or were you like, this is crazy? I'm not sure this is going to go anywhere.
Well, it wasn't meant to go anywhere. The only thing it was meant to do was to use up all those tomatoes. And that's the funny part, because I had no idea. I had no idea what it was going to be like. I had no expectations, which was, you know, even more rewarding in the end. But I just thought, well, you know, if the salsa came out as good as it did, I bet this is going to come out just as good. And it turned out fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. And I kind of played around with it. Obviously, I played around with it for quite a while, but, you know, I sampled it on all the neighbors and they all loved it. And they're like, well, we know what we're getting for Christmas. And I said, yes.
How did you know you were truly onto something, not just something that you and a couple neighbors would love?
Well, you know, the more people that tasted it, and I'm talking about friends, family, just kind of everybody. And then, you know, we were living in Park City, Utah at the time when I was creating this. And we had a lot of people, a lot of connections that were in food and beverage industry, bartenders, wait staff, caterers. So we had a lot of influence in our group of people. And when they were the ones that were saying, hey, you know, you might want to think about doing something with this, that's when you really start to think, huh, well, maybe I should. Having never been in that industry before, I don't know. I don't know if I'd do it again. It was definitely a long road.
I think sometimes, right, it's what you don't know that keeps you going. Otherwise, you would see all the barriers and hurdles in your way.
Oh, absolutely.
And on that note, I'm curious, like what, because you had said, like, I don't know that I would do it again. I know you're kind of half joking, half not, but, you know, what were some of the things along the way that make you think that? Like, what were some of those barriers that you were like, oh my gosh, now I got to get over this too?
Well, you know, first of all, when I first went into production, because I use co-packers, because, you know, the one thing I don't want is the liability of the kitchen and the health aspect, you know, health department and sanitary and all that stuff. So I use co-packers because they have all that dialed in. And the first thing, the very first hurdle was when they said, well, go ahead and let's get your recipe, send that over to us. And so I did. And I had it just like any other consumer would have it. A teaspoon of this, a tablespoon of that, a cup of this, half cup of this. And they said, they called me and they said, no. We need your recipe in gram weight. And I said, in what? And they said it all had to be measured out by weight. Well, yeah. And I'm sitting here going, oh, okay. So then another test batch and I had to weigh everything. And I just happened to have one of these little scales, you know, that a doctor had made me have to weigh food, which lasted all of 30 seconds.
I have one too.
We have one. We just don't know what they're for.
Yeah.
So I think you put plants on them or something.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Sits there.
Candles.
Yeah. Just makes it look like I'm measuring my food. It's, you know, it's more for show, really.
Right, exactly. So I weighed all of these ingredients out, but then I got stuck on the sugar because I couldn't get it to register because it was such a small amount of sugar, but it still had to be in some, it had to be a weighted measure. I ended up turning to Google for that so I could figure out what the actual weight of a tablespoon of sugar was. But yeah, that was my first thing where I was like, wow. That was a new loop.
Right. And those are the things that you really just don't even think about, right, when you're going into it. And I kind of wonder if you had started out with that, like, I have to scientifically measure everything, if if it would have taken the joy out too soon and if the recipe actually wouldn't have been as good because you would have been in a whole different mindset.
You know, I think you're right. Absolutely. I think the joy of it and the fun of it would have been taken away because when I was making it, I was in my creative mind and just really going with it and having fun and, you know, tweaking it. But if I had to take it to the scientific process from the very beginning, I definitely would not have been as fun and as enjoyable for sure.
So, you know, interestingly, I found you through the show Trending Today, which highlights, I should say, showcases stories of innovators. Why do you think they wanted to have you on the show? And I guess a better way to ask that would be, what do you think makes Smoke and Mary so innovative?
Well, there's a few things. So I got the call from Trending Today, which I was absolutely shocked because I'm like, oh, okay. And, you know, their first introduction was that one of their people found me at one of the shows that I attended. And we do a lot of shows because we want to get it sampled out there to industry and also equally to consumers. You know, they said they found it. The person loved it, thought it was great, and it would be a great addition to their show. And then they explained to me about, you know, it's about they're doing a segment on food and beverage and the food industry and people that are changing it up and doing that, you know, just taking it to the next level. You know, one thing that makes Smoke and Mary really, okay, there's two things that really make it distinctively different. We start with fresh produce. We don't use any reconstituted tomato juice. And we use only the finest, you know, spices and ingredients. Most people don't, they can't do that. They won't use all the best of something and they sacrifice it because of cost. You know, and that's the one thing I won't sacrifice is flavor and quality. I may, you know, maybe I'm a foodie snob, but I know there's enough people out there that want the best. They want good quality. They don't want to sacrifice all of that because it's not costing them as a consumer really a lot less. Because if you're going out to a bar, you're going to pay $12 for a Bloody Mary, no matter whether the mix costs them, you know, 50 cents or $1.25. You're still going to pay the price as a consumer. So they are demanding higher quality, better flavors. The other second distinctive thing with us besides the quality of ingredients is that it's smoked. And I'm the only one out there that has perfected the smoke. I've tasted a couple others and they just obviously, I don't know if they didn't test it on people or outside of their circle of friends, but I think I nailed it.
Well, it sounds like from what people have said, you've nailed it. And I've tried it and so I'm a brunch drinker. At most. So Bloody Mary's, like, it's a very brunch drink, right? You know, 10 a.m. ish. It's acceptable to have a Bloody Mary.
Depending on what time zone you're in, it could be 4 a.m. Or 5. I mean, that's, you know, all. You're fine.
That's right. I'm good. I'm okay. It's acceptable. I want to ask you a question about something, a couple things. But one is, you had just mentioned about you're the only one that's perfected it. And, you know, there's that cost kind of quality balance that a lot of businesses get wrong, meaning they go like directly for, I'm going to do that, but in a more quote unquote efficient way. How do you think you have fended off the competition? Because you're getting great success and notoriety. So there've got to be other ones trying to do what you're doing, right? So how do you think about making sure that you're still the one leading the way?
Well, since I've done, you know, and you know, I started this years ago, at this point, because we've been on the market for about 4 years now, and then it took 5 years to create it. So we're closing in on our 10-year mark here from day one. You know, there's been a couple that have come out with a little, they say they're smoked and then you taste them and then it's still, they're lacking the ingredients. The quality of the ingredients, the fresh products and produce. And I think as long as I continue on the path of not sacrificing I'll always stay as the leader. And, you know, for those places and the individuals that want, that don't really care about the quality as much, there's always room for those other mixes that aren't using the freshest produce available and that use reconstituted tomato juice. They have their market of people. But for the discerning, or more of a discerning cocktail on, you know, enthusiast, they're always going to go after something like my product. And I did I answer that?
No, my silence was more, I was thinking as you were talking about how oftentimes we launch something and then all this competition squeezes us out because we haven't differentiated ourselves enough to hold our position, to really be defendable. And I think in the market today, you have to be unique and you have to be defendable, meaning someone can't catch up to you and trump you right away, particularly if they have more resources. So especially if you're starting something new, right? Those big companies might have more resources. Right. But how a premium product and cost, or price, I should say, can actually help defend you. And if you look at luxury brands across categories, I'd say that's true. I mean, just to stay in food for a second, Whole Foods and Safeway, that's the grocery store we have out here, are both great in their categories, but Safeway can never compete with Whole Foods in the same way that Whole Foods does. So it's kind of, to me, as you were talking, that's what I was thinking about. Yeah, premium really is a barrier for competition.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the other things too, you mentioned that, you know, the bigger companies. Well, one thing is we own our company wholly. We don't have investors. So we don't have all these other, you know, hands in the pot, so to speak. And so, you know, it's us and we make the decisions. We aren't going to sacrifice on quality because, you know, an investor or some other group of partners is saying, hey, we need more profit. It does make it a lot simpler if you look at it in that aspect.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And you're doing it for the right reasons. You want to put out the best quality product possible.
Yes.
It's that simple for you. I mean, it's not never simple. Nothing in business ends up being simple, but, you know,
that's very true.
Yeah. You had mentioned earlier that, you know, there were many years and trials and errors before you had the product that you felt was kind of right to really put out on the marketplace. What's one surprising lesson you had along the way as you were going through that process?
Well,
one.
Or top three, if they interlude, whatever.
Right. Yeah, I could give you 100. One of the things that my husband, because like I mentioned, he is the gourmet cook. He always says, quit changing it. Quit changing it. Well, I'm one of the people that I'm an innovator. I'm always wanting to change to make things better. So one of the things that we were doing recently is because we were opening up another facility out in Texas and then also in the Midwest, because we're doing them throughout the country so that we have better coverage and less freight cost. So I had changed the horseradish to use a more local product rather than, because what we do is we ship everything from California to wherever these facilities are, because I will not change on the consistency of the ingredients. Well, I did with the horseradish, and we couldn't figure out why it wasn't the same. And it took one of our testing friends, who happens to be a winemaker and has a fantastic palate, to figure out, what's different in this? What did you change? And I said, well, the only thing different is we just use a different horseradish company, but they say that they're just, you know, that horseradish company said they were the same as the one that we were using. And he says, no, it's the horseradish. I can distinctly tell that that's the difference. And I just, one little tiny change. And, you know, the lesson that I learned was, first of all, not to change anything like my husband has always been telling me. But we won't let him know that. And then the second part of that is not, I mean, do your research. Don't just trust, like I trusted that horseradish company saying, oh no, we're identical to that. When in the end, they're totally different, completely different. So I use I trusted that what they were telling me was true rather than actually getting it, tasting it side by side and knowing for sure and certain that, you know, comparable. So that was a big lesson that cost us a couple months of production time. So
I'm glad you brought that up about production time, because I think sometimes we don't, so I'm like you, I'm always trying to, like once I make a change, I'm like done with that one. What change do I get to make next? And my team is always like, stop, just stop. Like you don't get to make any changes for the next 6 months. And we have a tech product, our assessment. So we're doing it on technology, but every time in a similar way, you just said, every time we make even the tiniest little change, something somewhere else breaks. Always. And that's just kind of the way it is, I think. And you just said it, like one little change changed your production time or slowed you down by 2 months, and there's an impact. But change is good, but it's a matter of thinking through, if I do this, what's the impact of it?
Okay, I am here at Launch Street with Derek Kuhn, who is the president of Brility. Derek, you are the perfect person to have this conversation with. I want to talk to you about business growth, because I suspect most of us are doing it wrong. I know I was. So how do you think about growth?
Hi. Hi, Tamara. So you're right. We have definitely seen some challenges how people think about growth. I think it boils down to this. They have these lofty aspirational goals, and then they have a bunch of disconnected plans and to-dos. The biggest thing I see, the biggest mistake they make is once they set these objectives and these aspirational goals, they need to spend some time thinking through and defining their strategy. And as we talk about strategy, it's an interlocking concepts that have compounding effect that are based on detailed research about your market opportunity, your company, your competitions, and then we form that, which allows us to be adaptive. So growth is mostly limited by the lack of a strategy, not for lack of goals and certainly not for lack of to-dos, but a thoughtful approach to the method behind the growth.
So Derek, let me ask you this. When you say compounding effect, I mean, I know what that means, but how do you know if you have the right pieces that allow that to happen?
Well, that's a great question. And this is where our focus on digital platforms really delivers. In order to judge the effectiveness of your efforts, digital, unlike anything in the history of man, finally allows us to see in real time interactions, how things are being affected, the ripple effect, as well as the direct effect. And then we can adapt continually based on the feedback loop that we get.
All right, I'm going to go a little bit personal on Launch Street and on you, but I have to ask because I think I'm not the only one facing this. You know, one of the things I really over here at Launch Street struggle with growth is we've done all these elements to grow. The phone is ringing, or, you know, the product is selling, whatever it is. The clients are coming. And then I realized, OMG, I have a delivery problem now. So I hit my growth. You'd probably call them goals. But I don't know, I don't have a strategy, or I haven't figured out how to follow up. So how do you think about those two elements of kind of where you're trying to go and then delivering on that?
Yeah, well, let me tell you, first of all, that is a common challenge we see amongst our clients, and is certainly that is what we call a good problem to have most of the time, right?
Yeah.
So, and it does come back to when we sit down and develop a strategy for our clients, scaling is included in growth. For example, if there are certain aspects of what you offer that have capacity, part of a good strategy is going to orient around those first. We prioritize those, and then we sequence later growth over the long term. So it is definitely something to consider. And if you can build a strategy from the beginning, accounting for both growth and scaling, then that is the best way to handle that.
That's so fascinating. So what are the initial steps that you have clients take just kind of right out of the gate to better understand where they are versus where they're trying to go and what it's going to take to scale, to bridge that gap?
That's a great question. So I've been doing this for 15 years and developed a process specifically for what you just asked. We call it the Digital Presence Assessment, the DPA. And what that is, we will sit down with a client for about 15 minutes, 30 minutes tops, and get a sense of their objectives and their business goals. We then dig into all of the research and we go explore every possible opportunity, the current challenges in the digital space. And we assemble an assessment as to how to proceed, illustrating, you know, in understandable terms, the different options that you have to help achieve your goal. And from that space, that assessment, the clients and us form a strategy together.
Now, if I'm out there in Launch Street listening and I want a part of this DPA, how do I do that?
Well, you know, we would be happy to do that. We actually offer it for qualified clients only. We do this for free. This thing, we used to charge thousands of dollars for it. And in some cases, we still do a more elaborate one. But this really is self-serving to us because it helps us match up. Are the aspirations of the client possible to achieve through a thorough assessment? And that's where, so for qualified clients, we do it absolutely free.
That's awesome. So I will, for Launch Street, I will put a link in the show notes to where you can learn more about that. Derek, always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Right, right. Well, and it comes down to, it's like the ripple in a lake. We don't feel it. We're making the change and we don't feel it. Everybody else around us feels it.
Wow, I never thought of it that way, but I totally see what you're saying. You're right, because we're in the middle of it. We're like, here you go.
We're ripple causers.
I'm going to put that on my business card. Tamara, ripple causer. That's fantastic. So,
wave. We can call us wave makers, too.
Oh, I like that better. That sounds more change versus ripple maker sounds more... I don't know.
It's true. Yeah. It doesn't sound as impactful.
No. Cause they also fade away. Right. I guess waves do too, but anyway, okay. That's a tangent. The other thing I wanted to make sure to ask you about is when you and I were talking offline kind of prior to the show, you were saying how you also have green tomato mix, but you didn't launch with that right away for very specific reasons. And I thought that was really interesting. So I'd love to have that conversation with you now about why you went with red first.
Okay, absolutely. So when I was actually creating these and using up all of those tomatoes, well, I also had a ton of tomatillos that I personally got from the farmer's market. And so I was making, I think I had four red versions, different red versions, and then I did one with the tomatillos and kind of played with all these at the same time. And the green one was always my favorite and everybody's favorite. They're like, ooh, that one's really good. You know, I love that. And going on and on and on. And I'm like, okay. But the thing with the green tomatoes at that time, there weren't any green drinks other than a margarita. And that was lime. So you wouldn't, you know, that's a normal thing. But to launch with, you know, I kept thinking, Dr. Seuss, green eggs and ham, green eggs and ham. I'm like, there's no way I can launch a new brand, new company, new product with a green drink. You know, I knew that I had some challenges getting people to probably adopt smoke and the pulpy chunkiness of our red mix. But then if it was green, you know, so that's why I made the decision, you know, just to start with the red, which is our original girl, our OG. And then we've got that recipe almost scientifically perfected, meaning making all those changes in the gram weight or in the weight measurements. But yeah, that's the reason why the green had been delayed until now.
Well, and there's kind of two valuable lessons, Lori, that I think you said in there. One is, you know, you've got to give consumers an anchor to hold on to when you're launching something new to the world. And I think this is true in, you know, direct-to-consumer products like yours or even B2B. So to go green and go smoking and green, to your point, is almost too far out too soon. where if you give them an anchor, so they get Bloody Mary mix, they get it, red tomatoes, check. Like it's something that they're familiar with, yet new with the smoking and the pulpy and the freshness. You give them a chance to catch up to you. And I can't tell you the number of times I've seen new ideas, and again, product, service, all the way around, fail because they went too far too soon. And I've certainly been guilty of that too, because I tend to go really far out. So, but I think that's a really important lesson of knowing how to kind of walk with your consumers versus going too far ahead of them.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. And you have to remember, whenever you're launching a product, you really have to remember that you are a consumer. You are always a consumer first. So what, you know, you got to ask yourself questions, and you have to ask questions of anybody and everybody around you, whether you know them or not. And you got to ask them, you know, what do you like? What do you think about this? Would you drink this? Would you buy this? And really get honest opinions. And, you know, the hardest thing I think is getting the opinion, getting a real honest opinion from friends and family.
Yes, true. They don't want to hurt your feelings.
Yeah, and that's such a horrible thing. It's like, but it's the most valuable information that you can get as an innovator.
Yes, agreed. And you as the innovator need to be open to hearing it. I think we can also get stuck in the, oh my gosh, don't call my baby ugly defensive mode.
Absolutely.
But the reality is, right, feedback is feedback, and you can filter it through your lens, but it's all feedback is good in some way. You just have to be open to it.
Yes. And I can tell you from personal experience, you know, when I was mentioning earlier that we do a lot of consumer shows. So I'm talking about festivals and, you know, just big, huge events where everybody goes for the music and the vending, you know, vendors and shopping and drinking and those type of events. And, you know, there are people that absolutely do not like smoke. You cannot change that. You can't change it. You know, and I actually have taken offense to a couple people because of the way that they reacted. And, you know, because I put my heart and soul into this for so many years to make something for other people. I didn't make this Bloody Mary mix for myself. I never did, because as I mentioned also earlier, it wasn't something that I drank all the time. So it had nothing to do with me. It's always about, I want to do something better. I want it to be better because I know there's got to be a better way. And when somebody will have this reaction of, you know, gut wrenching, and I'm like, oh my, and I'm sitting here going, everybody else thinks it's fantastic.
Yeah, what's your problem?
Yeah, well, yeah. And I'm like, wow. You know, and there have been times where I've just looked at people when they do these, you know, reactions, and I'm like, wow, I'm sorry it was so offensive, you know. But, you know, I try to keep that in check, but there are times when you just can't, because they just go for your throat on something that you're so passionate. And, you know, I don't think they mean to. I just think that that's just their reaction. And that's just how they are, their personalities. And that's the one thing that you have to be so careful as the innovator, is to really not take it personally, because that part is very difficult.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it also, so what you were just sharing solidifies to me that your product is for the right fit, for the right people, and not for everybody. And that's actually a really powerful thing to know who you're for. And you know, the other thing I was going to say earlier about kind of the lesson that came out of the story you were sharing is you do a really good job. One of the things I really appreciate in your product and brand and the story and just everything around it is that you really own your difference. Years ago, I worked on a product they were trying to bring to the U.S. It was apple juice, but it had apple bits in it. And in the U.S., that's not we don't tend to like to drink our juice and get food in our mouths at the same time. It's not
right.
It's not our behavior, but it is in Europe. So they were trying it here, but I think it could have been a winning product. It was actually pretty awesome. I think the bigger challenge wasn't the behavior change we were trying to create. I think it was that we didn't own the difference. We tried to hide it. We kept like, we'll just not tell them that there are bits in there and then they'll discover it, but they'll like it. And it was shocking to people. And so we got some trial, but we never got repeat for that reason. And I think, you know, with yours being kind of fresh tomatoes, a little pulpier, and smoking, like to own the difference really captures the right people and keeps the ones away that aren't the right fit to begin with.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, and that's true. So if I give somebody a sample, and I always make sure I tell them, okay, what's going to happen here is you're first going to get the smoke and then you're going to taste all the pulp of all the fresh produce. And I said, you know, cause we start with fresh produce, you know, we don't use the reconstituted tomato juice. And if they know what to expect, then they're like, oh my God, this is the best Bloody Mary mix I've ever had. And then I go into, you can also cook with it. Because of the quality of our ingredients and the produce that's in it, you can cook with it.
I did not know that. That's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you on our website, which is smokin', S-M-O-K-I-N, Mary.com, we have over, I think we have over 45 food recipes now that my husband created. Yeah, so, you know, to truly create, so one thing about creating a consumable product is you got to make sure people are consuming it all the time in many different ways. So and with the food recipes, we've just now given them 45 more ways to use this. And it also mixes well with all kinds of different spirits. So you can use it with vodka, gin, rum, tequila, beers, even white wine and whiskey. Jameson whiskey.
Oh, I do like whiskey. So going back to your earlier comment, though, about, you know, you only drink Bloody Marys in casinos, on airplanes, right? And I was saying I only drank it at brunch time when I go out to brunch, which is few and far between these days because I have kids. But it's but it's really brilliant to expand the usage beyond the typical. I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right. You were going into a very narrow category in usage prior.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, it is a thicker mix, so it does allow, and the reason why I made it thicker was because I like to talk, and you can probably tell just in this interview that I like to talk, but I like to socialize. When I'm out, and you know when you're out at brunch, don't you like to talk to the people you're with?
Yes, I do. I do.
And, you know, if you're sitting there talking and you don't have a sip of your drink for 5 minutes because you're in a good conversation, you shouldn't have to have a watered-down drink or a ruined cocktail just because you decided to have a conversation. So the one thing with our mix being pulpy and extra thick is the flavor. As your ice melts and as you have your spirit in there, the flavors open up even bigger and brighter as your ice melts. So, and then all that pulp holds the flavor. So I like to explain it a little bit more easier to understand is, you know, if you have a glass of orange juice that's got lots of pulp and then you've got a glass of orange juice that has none, to me, the orange juice with none doesn't taste like orange juice. It just doesn't taste like fresh. You don't have that freshness because if you squeeze a glass of orange juice, you always have the pulp in it. And that's freshness is in that pulp. So, you know, if you don't have pulp in your cocktail holding that flavor, then it just goes away. The flavor washes away as soon as your ice melts.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm like a little bit mouth gaped, like, oh my God, what a perfect drink to serve if you're having people over to socialize. Cause then the drink stays delicious, if not more, gets more delicious. Were these side benefits things that you kind of figured out along the way? I mean, I have to imagine that you didn't think all this through as you were smoking some tomatoes and giving it to friends.
No, all of this happened, you know, just as people started, you know, well, my husband, obviously he's just started cooking with it. And then my sisters also did. I have a couple sisters that were cooking with it. And that all happened way after the fact, because of course, you know, and as far as mixing it with different spirits, that came about as we were going to different cocktail beverage shows. So, you know, or if we'd be at a show and a bartender would come up and for the Jameson one that was at a consumer show and a bartender said, "Hey, have you ever tried that with Jameson? That would be really good." And my husband and I, we looked at each other and said, "Wow, she's crazy." And then we went home and I got on a flight and went out to another show and he came home and he called me late that night after I'd landed. And he said, "Hey, I tried it with the Jameson. It's pretty good. I finished off our Jameson. Need to get more." And I laughed so hard because I'm like, wow, you know, we really got to be open to continue to stay open to all these good ways of drinking it and cooking with it and keep our minds open. And it's been fun. It has been absolutely fun.
I think, Lori, there's a great insight into lesson in what you're saying, which is kind of, you really just said it, always be open to how your product is being used and could be used. And I think from even our side on Launch Street, which is totally different, right? We're a tech company at the end of the day, like the bare bones of the things that we provide is media, really, right? Podcast, assessment, online tools. But all those things have evolved over time because someone called or emailed me and was like, "Hey, I'm thinking of doing this and using, you know, your product for this." And I was like, "Oh, I hadn't even thought about that." So I think to presume that we know the best uses for our own products is actually really egotistical. And then actually, if we're listening, they'll tell us what to do.
Yes. And they'll always tell you what they want if you listen.
Yeah. You just have to listen. That's the key. That's the insight, I think. That is easily missed.
Right. And it's so funny when talking to consumers, I get so many people that say, "Oh, I hate Bloody Marys. I hate tomato juice." And I said, "So do I. I absolutely hate tomato juice. That's why I don't use any." And they look at me and they think, "What?" I said, "No, tomato juice is nasty. It's reconstituted. It has no flavor. It waters down." And they're like, you know, and now I've captured their attention. And I said, "How do you like salsa?" And they said, "I love salsa." I said, "Well, then come taste this." You know, because I think of it more, not just because it's pulpy, but I think, you know, it's got that freshness of the produce that's in salsa. So that's why I get them with that hook on the salsa. And then, you know, they'll taste it and they'll be like, "Okay, you've just changed my mind about Bloody Marys." I said, "Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say that because all the Bloody Mary mixes out there so far still, you know, have the same problem with the tomato juice thing." I said, "You like Smokin' Mary." And they're like, "Yep, you're right."
So before we kind of close out, because I can't believe we're almost out of time, where can people go to learn more, buy Smokin' Mary's Connect?
So there's a couple. So we are in California. We're in Total Wine and More in Northern Region. And same thing with Whole Foods. So if they have a Whole Foods or a Total Wine and More near them, they can go to the store manager and ask him to bring it in for them. And then that store manager will work with corporate to make that happen. But it's really about them asking the store manager and, you know, kind of demanding that they bring it in for them. The other option is they can purchase it on our website, which is Smokin' Mary, Smokin, Mary, Mary.com. And they can see the different options for the shipments, and they can see the recipes that I mentioned earlier. And then we've also got some cocktail videos on there. And then of course there's pictures of us on there.
Yes, I know. I've seen that. Now I got to go back and look at the recipes because I missed that last time.
Yes.
So Lori, yeah. This has been wonderful and I've got many more questions for you, but just to close out, what's one piece of advice you have for those trying to, you know, push the boundaries the way you did, maybe change the way a category is seen?
Well, one piece of advice, I would say you're always going to have fear. Always, always. I mean, it's looking at you around every corner, but you've got to push past that fear keep your passion strong, keep your motivation strong. And those are probably, those are all very difficult things to do. You know, build a strong support group, because that's going to help you when you jump into the deep end of what you think is the deep end of the pool, and it's the shallow end. You got to have your people there to pick you up and just, you know, keep reminding you why you've done this in the first place.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? And I think, you know, when times are good and when times are not so good, both that rings true both ways.
Absolutely.
Well, Laura, absolutely. Thank you so much for coming by. I am now very thirsty. So I'm going to go have a drink.
And it's brunch time.
Yeah, and it's brunch time in Denver. So I'm going to go get some friends and have a drink. All right, Launch Street. How fantastic was that? Wasn't Lori interesting? Yeah, so many good, just golden nuggets out of it. And of course, now I am totally thirsty. All right, here's our action. Go have a smoked Bloody Mary. All right, there's other actions in there. What I actually want you to do is think about how you can differentiate in your marketplace and in your world. And if you're thinking to yourself, well, I don't control the brand or the product, that's okay. How can you differentiate yourself in your work as well? Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.